I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
This is Coach E on Coach Talk, a HME production.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Coach Talk. I am your host, Coach E, and you have entered in the premier destination for business and finance tips. Look, we have had a lot of amazing guests on our show. And you know me, I'm all about the new business owner, the startup business, the small business less than 5 years. Our goal is to get you over that hump and not just surviving, not just limping, but actually thriving over that 5 year and essentially over that 10 year. We're talking about building businesses that actually last. So when I got the opportunity to get today's guest on the show, I was thrilled, okay? Overly excited. So if I ever told you before to get a pen, a piece of paper, or record, or go back to this show, you want to make sure you do that, okay? This is all about getting you to that next place. So I'm not going to drag it out any further. I am happy to have with us today Dr. Jeff Stanridge. I can go through all of his accolades, but I'm just going to give you just a little bit, He's a renowned expert in innovation, strategy, profit growth, organizational transformation, and leadership. That should say enough right there. That should say a whole lot right there, y'all. Welcome to this week's show, Dr. Stanridge. How are you?
I'm great. And the only person who calls me Dr. Stanridge is my wife. And she only does that when I really do something goofy, which means she does it quite. She'll say, way to go, Dr. Stanridge. So Jeff is fine. And Eric, I'm glad to be here. It's a pleasure to meet you. And I'm honored to be on the show with you today.
Look, like I said, there's just so much that I could go into about your personal accomplishments, but we're going to just kind of dig right in. Today, I really, really want to talk about let's back up a little bit. How did you get into working with small businesses? Why is this so passionate for you?
Great question. And it was really more of an evolution than a revolution. Mm-hmm. My entrepreneurial journey started in the third grade. I grew up in a small town in Southwest Arkansas of about 1,200 people. We lived 2 miles out of town. And so my dad would take my lawnmower and drop it off at the first house on his way to work in the mornings. When I got up, I would ride my 10-speed bicycle 2 miles into town, and I would mow the first yard and drag the lawnmower behind my bicycle to the second yard and the third yard, leave it there. The next day I would go back, I'd get the lawnmower at the yard where I left it, and I'd mow 3 more yards, and then I'd leave it, and Dad would pick it up and bring it home on his way home from work that second day. And then I'd repeat that every week. Through the course of the next several years, I worked at gas stations and muffler shops and all kinds of stuff like that. But I got into the healthcare world, spent a number of years in healthcare, and then got into the business world, spent 20 years with a company doing mergers and acquisitions. And I was very active in my local community. So I live just outside of Little Rock, a city called Conway, Arkansas. And in 2013, I was chair of the local chamber, and I started asking why we didn't have more startup companies in Conway, because we had all the makings of a great startup ecosystem. We had 3 institutions of higher education. We had 2 large technology employers, a very educated workforce, but we really weren't creating much in the way of entrepreneurship. So I pulled together a group and we started studying the issue and connecting with other resources across the state. And it took about 3 years. And over the course of the next 3 years, we ended up launching the Conductor in November of 2016. And I retired from my corporate job, literally on my 50th birthday, to lead the Conductor, to start and lead the Conductor. And we've been doing it now for almost 8 years, be 8 years in November. We've touched over 50,000 people. We have, we do around 500 one-on-one coaching meetings every year. We, about 55% of our, entrepreneurs are women-owned businesses. About 35% are racial minorities. And, over a third of them report growing businesses in the form of new revenue, new products and services, new customers, and new employees. So.
Wow. That is phenomenal. And it took you 8 years to retire. And I bring this up because most people are ready to retire from their current job to launch into their business like yesterday. And so they rush in. And, you know, that's a hot button topic for this show. Any words on that real quick before we really start getting in?
You know, so the very first question I ask is, why are they retiring? Why are they wanting to retire, right? Because have they found the connection between their employment and the real passions in their life? And I found the connections, the coaching connections, the creating new insights that lead people to better ways of living and working, which is something that I felt like I was particularly gifted at, kind of my calling. And I discovered that 8 years before I retired. And so therefore work was fun for me. You know, I mean, when I figured out the connection between what I was really gifted at, maybe what my calling was and how it intersected with my vocation or how I earned my living, it changed the game with regard to how I went to work every day. And so, you know, I tell people to start thinking about that. Where is the connection between what you're really gifted to do and be, and how does that connect to your vocation? And you might find that you don't want to retire anytime soon. The only reason I left Axiom, not because it ceased to be a good platform for me to fulfill my calling, but the Conductor emerged, which was a better one. And so that's kind of for me.
And I'm happy you brought that up because there's a young lady, one of my good friends, her and I have this conversation all the time about understanding who you are, what you're gifted to do, and why you were placed here. And when you understand that, when you show up at work, like you were saying, it's a whole different playing field. You understand that you don't go anywhere at no job you have just because you woke up this morning and decided to fill out the application. When we understand that there's a higher being, we understand that he's already put it in motion for you to be there. So it actually has something to do with where you're going. Now, you know, I think that's our responsibility to dig in to find that reason out. And I think that's what you are saying to do, like put in the homework first. I think one of the big things that a lot of people hear now is I want to be my own boss. And I tell people having a small business is not for the faint at heart. It really is not. And not everybody is designed to be a quote unquote boss. And okay. I have my own feels about the boss thing.
I don't even use the word, right? Don't even use the word boss. But you said a couple things. One about doing the work. You know, I saw something that floated around on the internet recently that said it makes no sense to lean on a shovel and pray for a hole.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how often do we lean on the shovel? Do we lean on the shovel and pray that that we could get a hole dug? Right. Well, no, we got to do the work, right? We got the tool. We got the strength. We got to actually do the work. And so I agree with that wholeheartedly. Second thing is that, you know, completely agree with you. Entrepreneurship and small business ownership is not for the faint of heart, and it is not for everyone. It is one thing to deal with the politics of a company and working for someone else, it is a completely different thing when every day there are people getting up depending upon you to put food on their table.
Yeah, you can no longer be selfish, you that's know? Right. That's right. And that's one of the things that we learned through the journey, mm-hmm. is that a leader will sacrifice to make sure that everybody else is in place and has what they need. And it takes a, like you said, a certain person to be able to do that. I believe God has to give that stuff to you. You know, even though we say that all of us should be selfless, I think there's levels to selflessness.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And you hopefully in your wisdom and maturity move from one level to the next in an upward trajectory over time. But yeah, you're right. That's for sure. Sacrifice is part of being a leader. You sacrifice the credit.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And you take the blame, right? You give the credit to others and you take the blame when things go wrong. Sometimes you sacrifice your paycheck for a few days so that you can make the payroll of everyone else's paycheck. Sometimes you sacrifice your weekends so other people can have theirs. And so, you know, if your tendency is to jump at the front of the buffet line every time you go to a buffet and get in front of everybody, you may want to question whether or not business ownership's for you.
Right, exactly. Oh, this is good. This is good talk. I am enjoying this. Okay. Look, so one of the things, there's so many different directions we could go here, so I'm trying to hear which way to go. I want to stay right here for a second. I did a show previously with a young lady that was in the mental health arena. Okay. And a part of preparing for that is I found that there are a lot of entrepreneurs and small business owners that suffer from some form of mental, I don't want to say disorder because that would be too much, but they deal with some form of mental health, whether it is depression, anxiety, these things are real. And I'm pretty sure on your journey, not just for you, but other people that you've coached, other business owners, what are some of the things that you found to be great tools to overcome those places? You know, we would want to say that the maturity is enough to say, look, there's other people that are relying on me to get up. But what if you're that solopreneur? You haven't yet got that staff, but you see the vision. And although they are still depending on you, you just don't physically see the bodies. What kind of advice would you give to that?
So what we have found is that entrepreneurs really need three things in general to be successful. Number one, they need access to expertise in the form of coaches, consultants, mentors, you know, someone that they can call. And so I believe everyone should have a coach. Even coaches should have a coach and or mentors. But they need to have experts that they can rely on. Number two, they need an ecosystem, if you will, or they need a community of folks mm-hmm. that they can lean on, that they can bounce ideas off of, that they can share resources, perhaps share mm-hmm. office space. We actually have just up the street a co-working space that's called the Arnold Innovation Center. And we run it. That's where we run a lot of the conductor programming out of. And we have about 150 members. And they you go in, and they sit down wherever their space. They have free Wi-Fi, free coffee, free snacks. They have a monthly networking luncheon. We have a Facebook group that's specifically for that group. There's programming going on all the time. There are coaches that are having office hours in there where they can schedule 30-minute sit-downs with them. And so they need an ecosystem of things. We do happy hour once a month, you know, so there's ways that it could just be to let their hair down. We were playing Bago out in the parking lot a couple of weeks ago, right? So just that ecosystem. And then finally, they need access to capital. But those mentors and coaches and consultants and that ecosystem are critical to everyone in terms of being successful as an entrepreneur.
So you actually just rolled us right into the next conversation right here.
You didn't even tell me ahead of time.
Right. See, we're flowing here. You see it? So, you know, about 75 to 85% of businesses that get started, they bootstrap. Mm-hmm. And you know, just for those that are listening that do not know what bootstrapping is. Bootstrapping is you use your own personal resources in order to build your business. And of course, as new transactions come in, you know, you're moving in that direction with that money, but you're not actually going to borrow you're not really going to borrow any money or give up any part of your company in order to get resources in order to build the business. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, now that we have a clarity, is there anything you want to add to that, Jeff? No,
exactly right. If you think about it, they pull themselves up by their bootstraps and they figure out how to finance their business.
Exactly. So that's 75 to 85% of people, they do that. And so some of the things one of the biggest reasons I believe that is that a lot of the times we begin to start businesses and our credit is horrible. And we have poor assets. So we have no choice but to enter into a situation of bootstrapping, which bootstrapping can be a great thing because there are companies that have actually made it. I mean, I think Facebook is one. Was it Dell? Did Dell bootstrap?
Yep. Oh, originally, yep.
Mm-hmm. So there are some successful companies out here that have been able to do it. But, you know, I always say that there's a mindset even with that. That's that. So now you're in survival because everything is about survival, right? Mm-hmm. And so then that makes us look at why do most businesses fail within 5 years, you know? And capital being one, leadership being another, poor planning.
For sure.
My goodness. Mm-hmm. Right. And one of the things you said is it took you 3 years to really research the idea before you launch. And I know that for some, they cringe. Again, we're in a society where everyone feels like I got to go now with my business. And we haven't even dissected, is this a business that's even viable to go not just now, but at all?
So that's a great point. So I use a stat that shows that of startup companies, generally like tech-oriented startup companies, about a third of them fail, a little more than almost 40% of them fail for one reason, and it's because they create a product that no one wants, or they create a product or a service that not enough people will buy at a price point required for it to be a profitable ongoing company. And they don't, and the thing about it is if they would do some customer discovery on the front end, do some research, take some time, but they're afraid to talk to someone because they're afraid someone's going to steal their idea. And so they won't talk to anybody. They'll just go home from work every night go into their bedroom and crank out code for 3 months and then produce this elegant piece of software that no one will buy because they spoke to no one. And everything that they've done is based upon a set of assumptions that they had that they never tested out in the marketplace. So we spend a lot of time working with entrepreneurs to help them think through and what's the problem you're trying to solve or what's the opportunity you're trying to seize, because people only buy for those two reasons, either to eliminate pain or to create some type of gain. So get clear on that and then create, and oh, by the way, validate that pain or that gain with potential customers. Validate that they believe it's a level of pain that you think it is, and then go create a solution that specifically addresses that pain.
Absolutely. And you know, and I can tell you now, we probably have knocked out of quite a few people at this moment. Sure. So let me, again, I'm trying to slow down because I'm excited about this conversation. So you make a lot of great points. And here's another thing that I want to add to that. Everybody wants to be first. And I learned a long time ago that being first is not always great. Being first means that you're going to get hit with everything. There's no pattern to follow.
That's right.
And so even if someone takes your idea, they still cannot do your idea the way that it was given to you to do.
That's right. You know, yeah, for sure. It's about 15% of the success is the idea. 85% of the success is the execution of the idea. I had a mentor who told me a long time ago, because I've always kind of been the guy that's right on the leading edge of things. And he said, Jeff, let me just tell you something. Pioneers get arrows in their backs. Yeah. So I had rather be a second mover and do it better than the first mover than to be the first mover and fail.
Yeah. Because you can always see what they did wrong. Right. Take the headache away. Like, I'm going to have my own headache just building it. But if someone else is going to go for it and they look, hey, more power to you. That's just, and but it takes maturity to get there.
It really takes maturity
to get there.
And a process and a good coach many times, because these concepts don't come naturally to a lot of entrepreneurs. I need to articulate the problem I'm trying to solve, and now I need to go test that problem in the marketplace before I start creating a solution. That's not natural. That's a scientific process, quite frankly, that sometimes it takes an expert guide to take you through that process in the most beneficial way possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we talked about the reasons why businesses fail. Now, one of the things I want to bring up is leadership, because I've read somewhere, I think, that you talk about the difference between building a leader and building an organization, which even though they coexist, it's very important to understand the difference between the two. And I find that when I'm dealing with, I have she won't mind that I have a client that has a real estate company, but also is a realtor. So at times she has a hard time processing between the two. Right. And for most of us that are especially bootstrapping our businesses, we have to be an employee as well as a leader. Right. So we have to know which hat to put on, which hat to take off, and how to let both hats kind of coexist together. Did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, one of the things that I have entrepreneurs do is I have them, I have entrepreneurs who come to me and they say one of two things. I want to make $100,000 a year, personal income. That's what they say. Or I want my business to generate $1 million. I want to build $1 million business. Right. Those are generally. And so what I do is I tell them, well, if you were to go down and get a job at the bank down here on a salary job, they're going to put 2,080 hours into the system because that's a normal work week, right? Or normal work year. So let's just say 2,000 because the math works. If you want to earn $100,000 a year of personal income from your business, then your time is worth $50 an hour. If you want your company to generate $1 million a year, your time to your company is worth $500 an hour. So you've got this $5,500. How much time are you spending on $12 an hour tasks? And so I like to suggest that, you know, at the start, you're going to be doing $2 an hour tasks. You're going to be doing all of them, right? But track your time. When you start to get overwhelmed, track your time for a couple of weeks, figure out where you're spending your time, put it into specific categories, and then say, gosh, I'm spending 8 hours a week, one full day a week on $12 an hour tasks. If I could take that other 8 hours, if I could go find somebody to do that for $12 or $15, and I could take that 8 hours back, maybe I could generate significantly greater return for my personal income and for my company. And if we do that multiple times, we look up and all of a sudden we have three employees, but they're handling 60% of the stuff that's just really mundane that we don't like to do.
Yeah, that is such a great point, because now we're really talking about that scaling factor. And that is one of the places that I believe businesses get stuck in: how to scale, when to scale, what to scale. And so that is a great practical method that you gave to, okay, this is when you know it is time to bring somebody on board. And I love what you said. Is it going to produce a return at the end? Because we should not be hiring people and our revenue is not going up. We're just hiring people because we just don't want to do a job.
Well, or because that's a vanity measure of our success is the number of people we have, right?
Right.
You know, I like to suggest, and someone said this to me, do what won't scale and then figure out how to scale it. Right. So too many businesses, they start out from the get-go trying to create a scalable company and they never really get it off the ground because they don't put in the hard work to get gritty traction in the business. And so forget about scaling to start with. Just go do what won't scale, get customers however you can. And then when you get critical mass of customers, you can and you can hire a couple of employees. That'll then free up the bandwidth to start thinking about, okay, how do I scale this thing now?
Wow. You're giving some great tips here. I want to I know we kind of moved towards scaling a little bit, but I want to go back to the leader a little bit here. Sure. You know, because being a leader is not managing everyone. It's really inspiring them to move, right? Now, some of us have to manage as part of leading, because again, that's a part of quote unquote the job. But as a leader, you know, I've watched many people with sales businesses where they have sales agents.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said. You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And you can't just give people money and think that that's the motivating factor.
Right.
There has to be something more to it. And they have to want to keep showing up for you. You want to kind of talk about that?
So I have observed over my years of consulting now that there are that the companies who succeed to the greatest degree, they put an intense focus on the creation of a specific culture within the organization. I like to call it the culture of excellence. And there are six components that I have observed in these companies that tend to stand out in their performance as companies in terms of the culture of excellence that they create. And the first one is strong leadership. So they and any leaders that they have in the organization are trained in leadership. If you know, they may even have some natural leadership capabilities. They're committed to the core values of the organization, core values being defined as the behavioral guardrails for how we treat each other. That's the first one. So strong leadership. The second one is clarity and focus. They know where they're going. They've got a vision for the company. They know why the company exists. They've got specific targets that they're chasing. And so they know where they're going and they know how they're going to get there. And there's an intense degree of clarity and focus around that. So strong leadership, clarity, and focus. The third one is they have engaged and committed teammates. There's been some research that suggests that going forward over the next decade, the single greatest expense that the American businesses are going to face is going to be employee disengagement. Mm-hmm. Disengagement, you know, it's one thing for employees to quit and leave a company. Disengagement's when they quit and stay. Mm-hmm. And if it's a remote workforce, then it's difficult to tell if they've quit and stayed. And so engaged and committed teammates. Well, if you've got strong leaders, if you've got clarity and focus about where you're going and you communicate that clarity and focus well, you're much more likely to have engaged and committed teammates. The fourth thing is empowering communication. So the word empower means to make someone stronger and more confident in dealing with the circumstances that they're facing. And so empowering communication is just that. It's a communication that makes people stronger and more confident. If they understand the vision of the organization, if they understand the strategic direction of the organization and how their job connects to that direction of the company, then they have empowered communication. They've been communicated to in an empowering fashion. The fifth one is 100% accountability. And that means that everyone knows what they're supposed to do. They are held impeccably accountable. And not only that, they hold themselves impeccably accountable. I have a definition mm-hmm. of leadership that is on my wall that says leadership is the most important requirement for business and personal success. In simple terms, it's defined as the willingness to be held accountable and then to fulfill that responsibility no matter what the external circumstances, situations, or pressures. And so we cultivate that definition of leadership across the organization in building that culture. And then finally, one of the management thinkers that I like to follow is Mike Tyson, who said that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Mm-hmm. And organizational agility is that sixth component of a culture, and that organizational agility is dependent upon those other five things: strong leadership, clarity and focus, engaged and committed teammates, empowering communication, 100% accountability. When we have those five things, then we have resilience and agility as an organization. And so as a leader, you start with building strong leadership, but you then layer in all of those other things around the surface there, around the circumference there, in order to create that culture of excellence so that you not only build yourself and your leadership team, you build the sustainability of the organization as well.
So, Jeff, what I'm hearing from you is that to really build these organizations that are going to stand the test of time, it's not going to happen overnight.
No.
And it's going to take a lot of work. So if you're current of what you're doing now, you're saying, I don't have enough time in the day for myself. Maybe entrepreneurship or small business ownership is not for you right now.
Yeah.
Because it's going to take more hours to start and really grow an effective business. And I always tell people, not only are you going to sacrifice time, but you're going to also sacrifice relationships.
For sure.
And so, you know, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about early on. Why are you doing this? Why mm-hmm. do you feel like leaving that job is what you are supposed to do? Because maybe it's not about leaving the job. Maybe it's about evolving as a leader within the job mm-hmm. and finding a new position yeah. that may better suit you. because with building out any type of business, you got a plan. You spoke about it yourself. It took you 3 years to really put together the scope of what your business was going to be doing and addressing and really making sure it was viable, right? Sure. And then you have to be willing to develop yourself as a leader.
That's right.
Which is always ongoing. You know, this is always ongoing. But then with the organization, you know, if you are a poor communicator, then everything has already went down the drain, because everything you do as a leader has to be communicated either by words or in writing.
That's right.
Also in body language, because we're speaking by how we stand, how we lean over. We're speaking in so many different ways. And this isn't a conversation to discourage people. It's just a conversation of, is it me? Is it my time? Or, you know, and here's the other thing, and I don't mean to bounce around, but sometimes you can know someone that's starting a business and you may be a great support for them in the way of administration or form of leadership within their organization. Maybe you are committed to that. So we have to, before you spend that first dollar, we have to really start the process. You know, is this my time? Number one, well, before even is this my time, am I being called
to this?
And is it my time? I have a young lady. I love to speak to her. Oh, she was on the show. I'll air her show if it hasn't already aired. But she believes that everything that you do is purpose driven. So if you go into the marketplace, it shouldn't be about the dollar, because it's going to come. It should be about the purpose of being in the marketplace, because we can identify that then, and we are working that, the money is going to flow, because you're going to always be in, how can I improve this? How can I help this person? It's all going to flow. But if you go in with the mindset, oh, I'm going in so I can be rich with a whole bunch of money, you're already, you know, setting yourself up for disaster.
You might get disappointed, right? For sure. You know, they say the law of compensation and service says that our compensation, and that can be personal compensation and it can be company revenues, right? Our compensation is directly proportional to the number of people we serve and the value with which we serve them. So the value with which we serve them, that is defined by the client, by the customer. And if we're not confident that we have a valuable service that they will pay for, and we don't do the work, as you said earlier, to really understand our customer and the degree to which they value our product or service, then we're starting off behind the eight ball.
Yeah, we really are. You know, and that goes back into our core values, right? How do we plan to deliver this? What is our integrity as a business? But I also go deeper in and say, what is yours as a person? You know, because your company to a degree is an extension of who you are.
Sure.
And how it operates. And what is the word? Ethics. You know, ethics is not about what is legal and what is not at all times. It's about your belief system. And so we have to really kind of keep all of those things in mind as we're moving forward in anything. You know, there's a thing that we have going on in my little circle that all money is not good money. And everyone is not a good client. Yeah. And so you have to remember, some dollars are worth saying no to, and some people is worth saying, we don't match.
I have I'm involved in as an investor, and they have a brand promise called excellent people delivering excellent service to excellent clients. And so they use that brand promise to sit down with their employees and say, hey, I want you to look at this situation. That wasn't excellent service. Mm-hmm. And this is what excellent service looks like. But they also use it to go to their clients and say, you have one strike that you can use to curse out one of my employees And I'm going to share with you that that is not the behavior of an excellent client. If it ever happens again, you're going to need to find someone else to service your business, because we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen them not only correct employees with that excellent people delivering excellent service to excellent clients, I've also seen them terminate clients for behaving badly as well.
And that's good to hear, because I think we've kind of built this motto, and I say we, I'm speaking in the, you know, in the marketplace, that the customer is always right, and the customer is not always right. And I believe that we've kind of gone astray on some valuable principles that has been that has affected business overall because of this poor mindset or this poor belief mm-hmm. or strategy that we use.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I work with my clients to help them create core values, I help them create core values and what we call a brand promise. And so brand promise is kind of their client-facing core value, and core values are really kind of the behavioral guardrails for how people treat each other in the organization. And I'd go so far as to say that if your core values that you have beautifully published on a plaque and placed on the wall around your business, if you don't use those core values, first of all, if people can't recite them, then they're not core values, because they're not impacting anybody's behavior, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, if you have an employee, no matter how good that employee is at generating revenue or producing whatever it is you produce, if you have someone like that that consistently violates one or more of those core values and you don't terminate them, they're not core values. They're just flowery words on a nicely designed plaque. If you don't hire people according to those core values, if you don't interview them with specifically designed questions to figure out how well they fit those core values, then they're not really core values. And so I like to keep core values focused on the internal culture of the organization. And then brand promise is kind of the external equivalent of that, is what is it that we want our clients to say or experience when they come into contact with us. So for instance, in our organization, you know, our core values are around do the right thing always, take care of each other, go the extra mile, never trade results for excuses, and have fun, right? Mm-hmm. Our brand promise is results-driven insights, tools, and connections. So mm-hmm. when someone comes to us, we want them to walk away with a results-driven insight, maybe something new about their business that they can use, tool, some kind of a tool they can use, or maybe a connection. Hey, I've got somebody that can help you with your funding needs, or that can help you grow your business. And so those two things serve as a really good balance for how we behave internally and how we want to make sure we're serving our customer and what we want them to say about us after they come into contact with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. You know, I think a lot of times, well, we take core values as just something to have, but not understanding the significance it really plays within you building out your organization. This is some good stuff. I'm telling you, it's some good stuff.
Well, I'm enjoying it.
So let's circle back around to the capital, because we kind of talked about the bootstrapping for a moment, and then I went off somewhere else. But one of the things that a lot of people say, there's no funding out here for startups. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't want to say there isn't any, but I think startups have to be a little bit more creative than a business that has a track history of 2 to 5 years with, you know, tax returns and all of that stuff. You want to go ahead and kind of dig in on that?
Absolutely. I spoke to a company this morning in a coaching call who's raising money, and she's pre-revenue, and she's a software solution, and her company is pre-revenue, and looked at her pitch deck, and I sent her kind of my ideal pitch deck, what I call the perfect pitch deck, has 12 slides in it, and here's what ought to be in each slide. And one of the pieces of advice that I gave her is be very, very clear about the pain that you're addressing or the gain that you're trying to create, because that's why people buy. And even investors want to understand what's the problem you're trying to solve with your company, and then start talking about the solution within the context of that problem. And we just don't do a good job by and large of really creating the case for why our company deserves investor dollars. You know, I will tell you that there is an enormous amount of cash sitting on the sidelines right now, waiting to be invested in companies from, and I'm talking about venture capital and private equity types of funding. But they're not going to invest in something that they don't think that they think is not going to generate them a 7 to 10 to 20 times return on their money in the next, 5 to 7 years. They're not looking for 6%, 6 to 8% per year, like the average retiree is talking to their financial advisor. They're looking for multiples of revenue, multiples of the investment, a 10X on the investment, or a 7X or a 12X on the investment. So we have to get creative to command that kind of attention from the investment marketplace. But, there are other ways to find some funding as well. If your company's not that cutting edge kind of technology-based company, there's a loan program called the Kiva Loan Program. And Kiva Loans, if you go to kiva.org, it's similar to GoFundMe or Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. You have to go to a Kiva trustee to get approval to be placed on the platform. But when you get on the platform, you create a video, you create a pitch, you talk about what you're going to do with the money, and then you crowdsource from people on that platform. They'll say, "Yeah, I'll loan you $50 or $100, and you can borrow up to $15,000 for a Kiva loan." And it's a zero interest loan. Once you get the loan, then you enter into an agreement to pay it back on X kind of a payment schedule. And as you pay it back, then pro rata, those dollars go into the accounts of all the people that loaned you money for them to loan back out to someone else. And so it's a great crowdsourcing way to borrow money for your business at zero interest. The State Economic Development Commission. So ours is called the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. In some states, they're called a Department of Commerce. Some states, they're called Economic Development, et cetera. They have programs that can be royalty-based investment programs, number one. They can be actual loan programs, number two. Or they can be economic incentives in order to help. So it may be in the form of tax credits for the actual founder or the business. But there's also something we have in Arkansas that I know other states have as well, and it's called the Equity Investor Tax Credit. So what it is they award it to a company that's going to be raising money from investors, and that company's then able to give that tax credit, pass that tax credit on to their investors. And in Arkansas, for instance, it's 33 1/3%. So if I make a $100,000 investment in your company and you give me tax credits, then I get tax credits for $33,333 that I can then distribute out to my investors, or we can sell for cash and distribute the cash out to our investors. So there's there are tax credits that can help the company itself, and there are tax credits that can help them entice investors to invest in their company versus someone else's. So I encourage people to explore all of those avenues.
Absolutely. So thank you, Jeff, because what you've done is you've actually opened up that there is more than just going to your local bank. And that is something I always tell people, that local banks are really geared to helping the larger businesses. Unless you can find a really good community bank or credit union that has a program for the small business owner, you're going to be looking beyond your big boys. And I used to work for one of them. So they have departments set up just for that kind of lending. But if you're getting started, you're not going to be as attractive because you're more riskier, right? And that's why everybody wants the bigger returns, because they need to know, look, if this thing hits, I took a huge risk on you and your idea. And and hoping that you could even administer the money properly into the right places that it needs to go, because there really is no true history of how you could run a business.
Yeah, and if they have some physical assets, you know, if there's some real estate that's going along with their business, if there are some hard physical assets, yeah, they're going to be able to borrow about 80% of the value of those, which means they're going to have to come up with 20% of the value. But they also need to be thinking about the working capital beyond that. So if it's, you know, if it's $100,000 and they're going to be able to borrow $80,000 of that, well, there's $20,000 in cash they need just to buy the assets, or, you know, to make sure that the business is equipped with the right assets. They also need to have some several months of working capital over and above that, in order to make payroll till the client revenue starts coming in.
Absolutely. Wow. So we went through a lot, and I thank you so much, Jeff, for being an open book, as I am too. All of my guests that come on, because, you know, you all have been in the trenches for years and have taken some hard hits to get the information that you know. It's, you know, we would all like to believe that we laid down and woke up and poof, it was there. Wisdom, you know, I understand Solomon prayed for wisdom and got wisdom, but wisdom also comes because of the things you got to go through, the lessons you get to learn.
That's right. That's right. They say, what do they say, that wisdom comes from making bad decisions or something like that? You know, and the other one that made me think of is that nobody sees the years of labor that goes into becoming an overnight success.
Right, because it doesn't happen. you know, those are things. You have such a great way of creating a picture in my head of different things, from the shovel to that. Like, mm-hmm. I am gonna forever think about that shovel leaning there, waiting for the hole. Like, it's coming. No, it's not coming until you bang it.
I got one more for you. I got one more for you. So a guy, it comes big rains and a big flood, and the guy's standing on his porch, and here comes a boat to try to rescue him. They said, get in the boat, get in the boat. He goes, no, the good Lord will provide. And so a few hours later, the water's up to his roof line, and he's actually on the roof, and another boat comes by and says, you know, get in the boat, get in the boat. He goes, no, good Lord will provide. And so the water's finally up to just 6 inches left with his chimney sticking out, and he's standing on the top of the chimney, and a helicopter comes. They said, grab the rope, climb up into the helicopter. He goes, no, the good Lord will provide. Well, he ultimately doesn't survive. He gets to the pearly gates, and he goes, what in the world? He said, I was waiting and waiting and waiting for the Lord to provide, and he didn't provide. And St. Peter said, what do you mean? He sent two boats and a helicopter.
Yes, that, okay. I was guilty for that at one point in my life. God,
y'all were.
You know, it is like, look, I did everything but just knock you upside your head and tell you, this is a prevention, lady.
Oh, my.
But no, it is so, oh, my goodness. And in business, your provision never looks like what you think it is.
That's exactly right.
Matter of fact, in life, it never looks like mm-hmm. what you think it is. But it comes.
Yeah, it does. And in the sage words of country music philosopher Garth Brooks, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers.
It's so true. It is so true. You know, and although we're diverting just a tad bit, this is so funny. I have the tendency to pray about stuff before I do it. Mm-hmm. And so, and then when he doesn't answer, I would take it as, oh, that means go ahead. Mm-hmm. So one day I went ahead and did something and it just collapsed in my face. And I'm like, God, I just thought that it meant go ahead when I didn't hear you. And he just so clearly spoke. If I didn't speak, that meant nothing. You don't go anywhere. And yeah. I'm like, oh, so that's what silence means. Stay yeah. still.
I'm one of the guys that says, hey, your will be done, whatever. But if you could let me know by Tuesday at 10, that would be ideal because I got things to do.
So. Oh, that really humors him because he really don't answer. you know, it is so funny because he reminds us every day that I am God. There is nothing you can do that's my place. For so sure. Your time schedule does not match mine. When I say nothing, that means do nothing. You're going to learn how to follow my commands and essentially be yoked to me. That's what we're doing, is learning how to be yoked to him and let him lead and direct the path. And, you know, I bring it all together to say, you know, if God is really calling you to entrepreneurship or small business ownership, maybe you're already in the waters. These are lessons that you're going to learn, because that is a part of your leadership being developed. When God puts you into the marketplace, no matter what area of the marketplace, and you've committed yourself, you are allowing him to direct you. And it's a very uncomfortable place, because you've never experienced it before in this realm. So you have to be open to it and give yourself grace. Every time you fall, get back up. It's a part of the process.
That's right. And
I think that's, you know, one of the key things that we have to remember as believers in a very wicked
system. Crazy world.
Yes, we have to remember that and remember who we stand for at all times.
Good stuff.
And again, if you fall short, get back up.
Fall down 10, get up 11.
Amen. Thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on to Coach Talk this week. I have had a blast. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I've had a blast as well, Coach E. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are so welcome. And hopefully we can get you in the future to come back on and give us some good advice. And I will be planning some events here soon. So I will check to see what your schedule looks like. But this has been amazing.
Look forward and to it.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'm hoping that everyone has really gotten some really good information. Again, this is one of them shows that you want to go back to and listen to over and over and over again, because I'm pretty sure there has been so much said that can help stimulate your growth, unstick you if you're stuck, or propel you if you're at the starting line and afraid to launch and being told to go. So this is Coach E, and thank you for participating in this week's episode of Coach Talk. Love you. Talk to you next week.